U.S. Department of Justice defines domestic violence as a pattern of abusive behavior in any relationship that is used by one partner to gain or maintain control over another intimate partner. Domestic violence is the leading cause of injury to women in the United States. Today, we explore one of the resources that's here in our community to help women, and men for that matter, get out of difficult situations. It is the Upper Cumberland Family Justice Center. Its director is Amy Stockwell. What's the most misunderstood part of domestic violence?
The most, one thing I think that surprised me is that domestic violence, we call it domestic violence, but violence isn't always the worst part of it. It's about, I know you and I have talked about this, it's about power and control. If somebody can control your actions without resorting to violence, that's easier for them. So that's what it's about. What, can I make you do the things that I want you to do for me without any consideration for you?
So there are cases where someone is being abused where violence is not involved.
Right. If you don't have control over your whole life, any part of your life, or if there are certain parts of your life that you can't control, if they control when you are allowed to work, or when you're allowed to see another person outside of them, have a relationship with another person, if they control the children in the relationship, then, you know, those are all signs. A lot of times it's financial, and a lot of times it's emotional. And I think that was really surprising, the prevalence of that. And I didn't realize what an effect it had on someone's life if they've been living like that, you know, for a number of years. Their world really shrinks to nothing, and you get used to that. It comes in increments. So you don't think, as, you know, the victim in that situation, you don't necessarily think that it's abuse.
That's the part of it that I think for a lot of people sometimes is difficult. You know, how did you get yourself into this circumstance? But it didn't start out that way.
No.
This person was charming. This person was... dream, you know.
And often they're that person to other people. So the people that at work with the abuser think that, you know, he or she is this great, outgoing, helpful, charismatic person, but that's not who they are at home. But if, you know, if everybody looked like an abuser and acted like an abuser, then we'd know immediately.
We could label
stay
them.
Away. Yeah. But, and they certainly don't do that on your first date. A lot of times it's when a woman gets pregnant or if a couple gets married. There are things like that that will set it off. And that abuser comes forward. That abuser part of their personality comes forward.
When you hear stories, are there commonalities of kind of how it started, when it started? How long into a relationship it starts? I'm sure everything's a little bit different, but are there some things that are similar?
I think if you go far enough back, then yes. So once somebody, if 23% of our victims are men. So I don't want to just say, you know, male, female. But in a relationship, once one of the parties becomes attached to the other one, so whoever's the abuser waits until there's that attachment, it seems like. So either they move in together, there's some kind of emotional upheaval, and they, you know, their victim of whatever sex becomes, you know, they come to trust them, and, oh, they're always going to be my emotional support and all that. That seems to be when that change will occur. So the abuser has to have them attached in some way, because otherwise they can still leave. And for abusers, I would say the majority, that having somebody leave them is the worst thing that can happen. So that's when they become very violent and will do anything, you know, to keep that person dependent on them. And by that I mean emotionally, because the victim may be the one who's paying all the bills and doing everything to keep this person up. But that's what they're trying to hold on to. And after that attachment's formed, any breaking away of the victim is a cause for escalation. So if they're only doing financial abuse or emotional abuse, that's when it may, you know, become violent.
Would it surprise the average person, Amy, of the people who are victims of domestic violence? In other words, the perception might be, okay, these are men, women, these are people who, you know, have a weakness for this, that they are people who, you know, have a proclivity to want to be taken care of. You know, those might be some misconceptions, but I'm betting that's not true.
A lot of times the victims are the caregivers, or the caregiving type. No, there's no, as far as if you could look out at a room of people and think you could pick out a victim, maybe. Like, oh, that person's probably more vulnerable, or, but no, no. I think the level of resilience that a person has, and that depends on a million things, is a lot of why some of them can get out before the situation, you know, has them trapped so badly that they think that they can't get out. But no, I mean, you would never know. And if one in four women is likely to experience domestic violence in their life, and I think that's an intimate partner number, but then a lot of people, you know, a lot more than four women. And I know, you know, a lot more than. So if you just look around your family, it's something that people hide, though, because they're ashamed, and they shouldn't be. But saying that doesn't change it.
But I feel like that's part of the reason that we all need to think about that this is not just someone who is the victim of true violence. One in four, this is someone that is stuck. Right. In a lot of ways. And there may not be violence in what we traditionally think of in that way.
I think recovery is worse if there's the emotional abuse. And that's what we see. Sometimes that's harder for them to leave because they believe these stories that their abuser's telling them about how worthless they are and nobody will ever want them. And they'll be living, you know, at a homeless shelter because, I mean, and those stories, after a while, the hard things and the bad things are easier to believe, right? So as you beat somebody down over time, I mean, that becomes the truth. And that's, it almost requires deprogramming, you know, once somebody is able to get out. But when we see that happen, it's hugely, hugely rewarding.
Amy Stockwell is our guest. She is the director of the Upper Cumberland Family Justice Center. We will let you know how you can take advantage of the services that they offer, anyone in the Upper Cumberland, offices both in Cookeville and in Livingston. Amy Stockwell is our guest from the Upper Cumberland Family Justice Center. I bet when people find out who you are and what you do, one of the questions they want to ask is, I just don't understand, why doesn't someone walk away? Why don't they get out? What is it that the person who's never been involved in that kind of relationship, what is it they don't understand?
Well, they're not always awful. An abuser can't be awful all the time. That would make that decision to leave way too easy, right? And remember, their whole goal is to keep them there. So there's a cycle. You know, there's the abuse, but then there's the honeymoon period. And, you know, they're kind and loving and doing whatever it is that their victim needs to feel like, oh, he's going to change. They're always, you know, promises to change and I'll do this. And so once that honeymoon stage is okay, right, and it all depends on if the victim is reattached, okay, like, okay, I'm reattached to this relationship. And so then if her behavior starts to skew a little bit from what the abuser, male or female, wants it to be, then we start, you know, seeing arguments and more control is exerted. It may start out slow, right? Because still might be a little, those bonds may be a little tenuous. But sooner or later, once they think that person is attached again, then it will escalate. And if they don't have control over their behavior, then it will then again result in violence.
Violence can certainly be one of the triggers. What are some of the other triggers that lead people to say, I got to get out of this? I'm sure you've heard victims talk to you.
Yeah, a lot of times it's children. So children can be a reason that victims say they want to stay. And they'll say, well, he's a good father. He's only abusive to me. Well, that's not going to hold. As long as he can abuse you, he doesn't have to abuse those children, right? But those kids are also going to grow up to be an age where he's going to want to control their behavior as well. So what's going to happen? What's his go-to when that doesn't happen? Or hers? Because it's hard for me to believe, but women will, you know, use all of those emotional to violence on their children as well. So that trigger, I guess, is that what we're talking about? Okay. Yeah. The trigger is whenever that control is broken. The kids either make that mother, usually, sometimes father, want to stay so they can have a relationship with the other parent, or they'll say, I don't want my children to think this is a healthy relationship, because the relationships modeled for them are what they're going to believe are true. And it's just natural. So a lot of people will say, okay, this is why I have to leave. The number one threat, though, if you have kids from an abuser, is you're never going to see your children again. And that's not true. I mean, that the court system doesn't allow that, but it's the scariest thing you can say to a caring parent. So I think the children are a lot of times that trigger either way, but usually in the end, they might leave for the kids. Or they have somebody that says this is not somebody that they trust, somebody that they believe, that says this is not healthy. This is not a normal relationship. What he's doing to you is abuse. I mean, in whatever words they use, but that trusted person says that to them. So we know that people come into the Family Justice Center usually after, not their first time they hear about it. So law enforcement might say, you know, here's the Family Justice Center card. And they might say, oh, okay, but they probably won't come in unless they need an OP. But when they hear from somebody else that's been to the Family Justice Center, or somebody who's had an interaction with the Family Justice Center that's been positive, or know somebody personally, then that's more likely to convince them to come in. And I think that person has to have a relationship with that victim so that they trust them. Because, you know, trust is really hard, especially if you've been a victim of domestic violence.
I think what sometimes is lost is this is someone that in most cases, based on your education to me, this is someone who has been totally cut off from every part of their life. Their money maybe is being controlled. Where are you? You know, what are you doing? What time will you be home? In many cases, they've been totally cut off from family and friends.
That's the best one right there.
And so that feeling of alone has to be a giant burden to stepping forward and saying, I'm getting out of this.
That's right. And they've probably been told that they're worthless. So none of those people would want you back if they really knew who you were like I do. But the isolation allows for all the other things to happen. Sometimes you have somebody that's not isolated, though, so none of those cases are exactly the same. But that is a number one. And, you know, a lot of times employers know. You can tell if somebody shows up to work but is constantly anxious, their phone's ringing all the time, somebody's coming in to check to make sure that they're at work, especially if they then accuse them of some kind of inappropriate relationships at work, that's not a healthy relationship. That's usually a big red flag for me.
Amy Stockwell is our guest from the Upper Cumberland Family Justice Center. Amy Stockwell is our guest. She is the director of the Upper Cumberland Family Justice Center. We've danced around this a little bit during our conversation, so let's put it out on the table. We think of domestic violence as men on women, but I get the sense from a couple of comments that you've made that perhaps the cases of women violent against men, is the number increasing, or is it just prevalent?
I think that awareness is big now. I mean, it's something, while it's still taboo to talk about, there's still the shame and humiliation like we discussed before, but I think more men are coming forward because they recognize that they are victims, and maybe they don't think that they'll, you know, be ridiculed as maybe they would have in the past. But people, they are mean people. It doesn't really matter, you know, which gender you're assigned to.
And again, it doesn't have to be violent,
right?
Which I think is part of the reason we think of it as more men, stronger, bigger,
right,
against
smaller women. But it doesn't always have to be the violence part of it. It can be the emotional violence or whatever.
Although we've seen some heinous violence committed by women against men. And men are afraid to fight back in a lot of cases because they're afraid that the system is more likely to label them as the abuser. So, you know, there is a catch there. So I think a lot of them realize that if they can't fight back, then they're going to need to do something to legally separate themselves from this person. So that, I mean, that's a fantastic form of abuse, right? I'm gonna charge you, have you charged with domestic violence, and then you'll have to spend time in jail, and then you'll have to go to court and defend yourself against this. I mean, people are creative.
Has law enforcement changed the way it deals with this issue?
I believe so. We also know now that domestic violence correlates with officer injury and death, you know, on the job, and also with mass shootings and things like that. So as we become better at understanding how far these ripples go out, I think that there's a lot better training that goes on now. I think officers are able to, they're able to look beyond just that one instance that they go to if they're called out to a home, and they're able to look and see what the whole dynamics of this relationship are. Because a lot of times victims are not very nice to law enforcement when they come out, but they're working on their survival, and they don't know if law enforcement can keep them safe because they don't know all of those dynamics. So I think they're, especially around here, we have some really, we're lucky to have some great law enforcement officers.
Are they working, I'm assuming there's training and that sort of thing, are they working to push people towards the Family Justice Center and the resources that are available?
Yes. So I would say the majority, I know that it's true, the majority of our referrals come from law enforcement. So the Family Justice Center has a second sort of mission besides the direct services, and that's to work on, you know, the systemic response to domestic violence. And so we have done training with law enforcement, and we've talked about how can we help. We want to be a resource for them too. So when they have to leave a scene, even if they know that victim is probably still in danger but won't leave, at least they can send them to us. So here's the card. You can get an order of protection, or, you know, what, somebody can answer those needs. So we want to be that assistance that law enforcement can't do, which is really difficult for them.
Is the fear of the involvement of law enforcement still one of the things that hampers a victim from stepping out?
Yeah, because punishment for that is usually pretty severe. And I think it's interesting, not in a good way, but a lot of times when a victim calls law enforcement, it's not because of the worst incident just happened, but something really horrible may have happened last time, and now they're seeing this escalation and it start up again, and that's when they call law enforcement. So that's another thing that, you know, we're trying to educate people on, you know, law enforcement and other agencies, if they don't already know. A victim is not always able to call 911, and they're not willing to risk that punishment and retribution for involving law enforcement until they're really scared that something will happen and they're trying to prevent it.